The recordings are now in.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the Policy and Implementation Working Group call on the 14th of January, 2014. On the call today, we have Cheryl Langdonor, Ann Aikman Scalise, Greg Shatton, Chuck Gohn, Alan Greenberg, and Michael Graham. I show apologies from Wolf Ulrich Nobin and Amr Elsdar. From staff, we have Marika Koning, Mary Wong, Karen Lentz, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Chuck.
Thank you. This is Chuck Gomes, and this is the Policy and Implementation Working Group call. On Wednesday, January 14th, our call today is an hour and a half instead of a typical hour so that we can make any final changes to the initial report that will be publicly posted for comment early next week. Now, did I hear, was Cheryl not mentioned in attendance? Because Cheryl is also...
I was the first name mentioned in attendance.
Oh, I guess that age thing come in again. I guess I wasn't in tune. So, okay, thanks, Cheryl. I didn't want you to be missed. See, I was looking out for you.
I know you just like to try and ignore me, Chuck. It's all right.
Okay. So, does anybody have an update to their statement of interest? Okay. Not hearing anyone or seeing anyone. Is there anyone on the call who is on the dial-in or dial-out, whatever the case may be, but not in Adobe Connect? Okay. Then can see the agenda on the right side. Are there any suggested changes to the agenda or questions about it? Okay. So we'll just go ahead and proceed. We'll start off by going through the document. Now, notice our plan is not to go through every edit, but only those where there may be discussion needed. If you do still have any edits, and by the way, I appreciate the many people who provided edits. The document we're looking at today does not include the edits from Michael, but your edits are certainly appreciated, Michael. And what I'd like you to do is to, if there are any edits that may have some controversy, let us know as we're going through the document where those are, and we'll talk about those. If they're just minor edits, I don't think we need to talk about them.
Yeah, this is Michael. Yeah, I'll do that. There really is only one place where it might create controversy, but that was only because I was viewing this as a draft with that understanding, and so I was removing some explanatory statements like we'll leave this for further comments and such, figuring those would come regardless of whether we invited them.
Okay. Now, that would be great if you would do that, and the others, all of us can look at what you submitted as edits, and if there's any comments on those, they can do it. But let's not spend time on minor edits. And just as a preface to everything we're doing today, we want to make this document as clean and accurate as possible, but we also have a limited time. So let's keep in mind that we will, after we get comments back from the initial report, be able to fix other things that we find later. So unless it's particularly crucial, it won't hurt if we miss a minor thing or two. At the same time, we don't want to miss any of the significant issues, and that's what we want to focus on today.
Chuck, it's Ann. May I ask a question?
Sure. Go ahead, Ann.
I should have raised my hand in Adobe. Sorry. Ann with ITC for the record, and this is going to be a really short question, and I don't want to take up time for it during the meeting, but I did want to understand the timing of the process better in terms of identification of potential bylaws changes that would be required. I mean, I understand that we're not seeking in this initial, this preliminary report to identify which of these items would require bylaws changes, but I'm just trying to understand where that comes in the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. This is Chuck. And really, that's a very good question. Let me turn it to Marika.
Thanks, Chuck. So this is Marika. So actually, Anne, for those items that we suspect bylaw changes are needed, and those are specifically the the three processes, although I think from at least staff's perspective, we believe that only for two of those probably bylaw changes are needed. Those are actually included and part of the annexes, that's what the working group reviewed, both the part that would go into the GNSO operating procedures, as well as the part that would probably be inserted into the PDP manual. As for the other items, it's my personal opinion, but it's probably something that we may need to further review from a staff perspective. I wouldn't expect that any of those would require bylaw changes as such. However, as we are, I think, recommending that an implementation review team should be formed as part of PDP efforts, maybe that is something also the working group may want to consider as part of your final report, that in relation to the implementation of these specific recommendations that some members of the group form an implementation review team that can work and consult with staff as necessary as we would move forward on the recommendations, provided, of course, that these are adopted by the council and the board in the cases where bylaw changes would be needed.
Okay, so it's just my failure to read the annexes. There's actually there's actually language in the annexes that is proposed language to change the bylaws, or it just says this would require a change in the bylaws?
This is Marika, if I may answer. It's specific language that will be inserted in the bylaws. I think what we currently foresee is that for the guidance
I mean,
process,
what do the annexes say? Do they say we foresee a change in the bylaws?
No, it's the actual language that we would propose be inserted that follow basically the model of Annex A of the PDP. So basically it's set up in a way that the key steps of the processes are incorporated or included or would be included in the bylaws, and the details of that process are actually outlined in the manual in the similar way that the PDP is currently captured.
Okay, so I just need to take a closer look at the annexes because the proposed bylaws changes are already in those annexes. That's what you're telling me, right?
Correct.
Okay. Sorry, I apologize for not having done that before.
So before I turn it to Alan, please remember to identify yourself for the transcript and the recording, and that exchange that just happened was between Marika and Ann. So please do that. Again, we don't need it. We all know each other's voices by now, but for transcript and recording and other people listening, it's really helpful. Alan, it's your turn.
Thank you very much. I guess I'll want to say something close to what Marika said, but in a slightly different way. When we last revised the Annex A on the bylaws, which talks about policy development process, we either by blind luck or cunning put some words in which essentially say that unless we're doing consensus policy, capital C, capital P, or the other way around, correct. All council has to do is set up other processes, and they don't have to be in the bylaws. They could be integrated into the bylaws at some point, should we choose, but they don't need to be unless it's a formal consensus policy, in which case it does need to be put in there. So much of what we're talking about as a result of this PDP does not need to be in the bylaws, but could be.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate that. And I see that Ann is in agreement with you. Okay, so let's start making our way through the items. And the first thing I want us to talk about today is just to get a confirmation. We talked about this a little bit last week when Jay Scott was chairing. But let's make sure that at least those of us that are on the call today are in agreement. and if not, what we need to do to get an agreement. But I suggested that we use a little different approach, although it has been used somewhat like this in one, at least one other public comment period in the past, for the public comment period, containing two things: some sort of a short answer survey that could also have the opportunity for comments if we want. We can worry about that detail later, so that we get responses to the things that we're definitely asking for feedback on. And then in addition to that, we can also have a text comment option as well, but we would have that organized in a template fashion so people's comments are readily identified as to what they apply for, what they apply to, and then that would facilitate our summary and analysis of the comments. So are there, let me just ask, first of all, are there any questions of what I'm proposing? And secondly, are there any objections to doing that approach to the public comment period? Marika?
This is Marika. I just wanted to know that, you know, I haven't created yet a draft of the survey because I was kind of hoping for this session that we actually lock down the text, because, of course, it's important that we use the same language as in the report. But my plan in principle is, you know, provided we can come to agreement on most of these items, to prepare a kind of draft survey and as well as template, and hopefully be able to share that with you by Friday at the latest, so people can have a look at that. And if you have any comments or edits, you know, you can send them in so I can still change or update that prior to Monday when we're, you know, planning on publishing the document and opening the public comment forum, if that is helpful.
Thank you, Marika. This is Chuck. So would that be sent to us early enough in the day on Friday so that people can address it during their work day on Friday?
This is Marika. I cannot guarantee that. I'm at the moment in D.C., and I have a full set of meetings the rest of the day as well as tomorrow, but I'll do my best.
Thanks. I fully understand that. So I wasn't, and I obviously put you on the spot, but let me then ask everyone that's on the call, and then we should send out an alert to everybody on our list that we will need a short turnaround time on any responses to what Marika sends us sometime on Friday. Marika, what would be the deadline for responses, comments, edits to what you send out on Friday?
This is Marika. I'm happy to set, for example, Monday by 1500 UTC, if that's acceptable to people. I will need to get it over to web admin in Los Angeles for them to publish it. I could even do it a bit later, but of course it depends a little bit, of course, on how many changes or edits there are, because of course it will take me time to do so. So my suggestion would be 1500 UTC to allow me enough time to make those changes and then, you know, get it published later that evening.
Thanks, and I'm okay with that, but let's see what Jay Scott thinks.
I just want to first apologize to everyone on the call for being late. I'm having calendaring issues, and I'm on the road, and my phone and my calendar aren't necessarily syncing, so I didn't get your butt on the phone reminder, so I apologize. Second, I just want to say I think the survey idea is innovative and new, and I think it's hopefully elicit some comments from people in a structured way and encourage them, because they won't have to spend a whole lot of time doing it, and give us a feedback that we wouldn't normally get. And so I fully support it, and I want to thank Chuck and for being so creative in suggesting that, and thank you very much. So I just want to give my wholehearted support to that.
Thank you very much, Jay Scott. Michael.
Yeah, I just wanted to agree with Jay Scott. I think that's a really innovative way, and having dealt with responding to public comments with an eye to wanting to ensure that we respond to all of them adequately, I think it's a great way to focus those comments so that they can be responded to and actually applied to the document. So really appreciate your coming up with that.
Thank you very much, Michael. This is Chuck again. And just to give you a one-minute background, first of all, I've been thinking we should structure public comment periods in a more effective manner for a long time. But I spent, along with some others, a large part of the holiday season reviewing public comments on the INSCWG work, and it just reinforced it to me. Thanks, though, for the support for that. All right, so I'm not seeing any objections to that approach, so we won't spend any more time on that. Marika, thank you for giving us the latest version minus Michael's edit, and that is very helpful. So let's go to the executive summary. Now, if you're like me, you haven't made it through the whole executive summary yet. So if there's something that you find in the executive summary that we don't talk about today, because we're not going to read through it on the call in detail, then please put that on the list by Friday so that we can catch those things if there are any. I was able to get a little ways through. And first of all, I want to compliment I think it's a very good executive summary, and I think it included some of the things from Ann in there as well. And so before we start going through it, I see we've got a couple hands up. Ann, you're first. Mm-hmm. Ann, are you on mute?
Sorry, this is Ann. I was on mute. Thank you. Just want to thank Marika for clarifying that binding, non-binding language, because I think, Chuck, you had mentioned you thought maybe it related to consensus policy versus other types of policy, but I think it's now clarified both of these processes that talk about binding advice and binding guidance, or non-binding advice and binding guidance, are actually, I think, processes outside of the consensus policy process, because consensus policy would require a different process from one of these two. And so I wanted to thank Marika for clarifying this, because I think it's currently clear what is meant by the binding and non-binding in those two processes. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Chuck again. And I, as you can tell, I needed the clarification too, because I didn't have the document access to it at the time I was responding. But thank you for asking the question, because these are very good clarifications here. Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just on the executive summary, I just want to reaffirm that most of what is in there is derived from what is in the report, so hopefully you shouldn't raise too many red flags. And as you noted as well, Anne made some suggested language, I think, one or two weeks ago on the mailing list, and I've also included that in the introduction section for the new processes we're proposing. So just to reassure anyone that there shouldn't be anything new or surprising, hopefully, in there.
So just very quickly, on the things I went through, in section 1.1 on the background, very minor edit in the very last line. I don't think we need the on policy and implementation in a GNSO context. We don't need to discuss that, I don't think. In section 1.4, the proposed additional GNSO processes, I think it would be, and this is, I want people to disagree if they certainly don't agree with this, but I think it would be good in that first paragraph to reference Annex C, which gives kind of an overview of the new processes. We later reference the following three annexes that explain in detail the three new processes, but I think it would be good in 1.4 to reference Annex C, which is that kind of overview chart of all the processes and how they fit in. Any discussion on that or disagreement? Okay.
Chuck, this is Rick. I'm just trying to get my hand up.
Okay. Go ahead.
I think you're actually probably referring to Annex B, or maybe I got the numbering wrong, because we do refer in the in the last paragraph to Annex C, D, and E. So do you, would you like me to include a reference there to Annex B, or you prefer that to be in the introduction?
You are correct. I should have said Annex B.
Okay. And do you prefer that to include that in the that last paragraph, or I insert it somewhere in the introduction to this section?
My personal view is in the introduction, because it kind of gives a nice overview before we talk about the three specific processes. But if others think differently, I'm very open to that. Any comments or discussion on that? By the way, it's Chuck speaking again.
Just nice to agree from a couple of us.
Oh, yeah, there we go. I even got agreement from Cheryl. Thanks. And Jay Scott, thanks. Okay. All right. So let's not belabor that, but and that wasn't an obviously essential thing, but I think it would be a helpful thing. Now, forgive me if I'm a little – Marika, did you have more to say there?
No, sorry. Lowering my hand.
It's all right. We all do it, so we're used to it. So I'm skipping between a live document where I put my notes. So if I don't see a hand real quickly, somebody just yell at me on that. So that was one thing. In section number 1-4 and on to page 5 there, where that paragraph continues, that last sentence says, the working group proposes three new standardized processes for GNSO consideration. I deleted of such issues because I thought it was kind of confusing. Just a minor edit, I think. But if somebody thinks that's not needed, that's okay too. If you look then at the bullets of the three new processes on page 5, you'll see that in the first two, highlighted in yellow, are Marika's clarifications or definitions of binding and non-binding, and that's what Anne, of course, was referring to, which I think is very helpful. Unless somebody thinks we need to talk about that further, we'll just move on from there. Okay. Go ahead. Who's that? Who's speaking? Go ahead.
I've been doing so many calls without Adobe that I forgot to raise my hand. Thank you. It's Anne again.
It's okay.
At the end of 1.4, if you strike out of such issues, you're actually changing, I think, what was the intended meaning of the sentence. I'm not saying I'm opposed to that, but it really was about processes that would allow for, you know, GNSO deliberation on the issues. It wasn't the sentence, I think, was not about here, please consider these three alternatives. It was about these, you know, these are ways for the GNSO to deliberate and provide advice on such issues. Now, that may be really picayune and you don't see a real difference there, but it was two different meanings.
So this is
Chuck. Might say GNSO deliberations on such issues or something.
Yeah, I think it's the placement that bothered me more than anything else. So maybe we don't need to delete it, but place it in a better place, because it says for GNSO consideration of such issues.
Meaning the issues that arise that, you know, need to be dealt with efficiently in a standardized manner.
If you're more comfortable with that in there, I'm not going to object to that.
What do you think about deliberation for GNSO deliberations regarding such issues, which was actually the intended meaning?
That sounds pretty good to me.
Okay.
Anybody else? Okay. So did you get that, Marika?
No. And can maybe repeat? So it would read
for GNSO, this is the end of 1.4, instead of at the very end where it says consideration, it would be GNSO deliberations regarding such issues.
And Cheryl liked that? Okay.
Thanks, Cheryl. Oh, this is Ann. Thanks, Cheryl.
Okay. Very good. moving on, and I am going to keep pressing because I know we have an hour and a half, but we want to make sure we at least get the things covered that we need to discuss. So I'm going to try and move fairly quickly without leaving people behind. Just looking at my notes here, and as far as I got, and that's as far as I got, so I don't have any more notes. But the rest of you can join me, and anything else you find, please put it on the list after this call as soon as you can, but definitely by early Friday in the executive summary so far. So let's then go on to, let me get back over here on Adobe so I can watch the queue. Anne, is that your previous hand?
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
That's all right. I'll try and remind you. Again, we all do it, so none of us are going to be critical. So,
just too many meetings.
tell me about it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go to, let's see where I'm at here, get my NV. Working definitions, the very last one, bottom up in a GNSO PDP, okay?
Which page are you on, Chuck? I'm sorry.
I'm on page 12.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, that's and I'll try and give the page numbers because I know it's hard to stay with everything here.
Okay.
But we grappled with this and did a lot of wordsmithing last week on the call. To me, this definition was still kind of awkward, so I made some changes. Take a look at those real quick. Because we spent so much time on it, I wanted to at least see if what I did is acceptable. If not, we can actually tweak it more offline, but take a look there. In fact, I'll read it to you in case somebody doesn't have it in front of them. And we're talking about the bottom up in a GNSO PDP. A fundamental principle of ICANN's participation and policy development decision-making process, whereby policy and organizational decisions and analysis originating from stakeholders who participate in the process to the board, and to me that part right there was itself. I never was comfortable with that last week. So here's what I suggested, starting from the very beginning, and it's in my comment. A fundamental principle of ICANN's participation and policy development decision making process, whereby policy and organizational decisions and analysis. And here's where I started making the changes. Originate with stakeholders who participate in the process and then develop recommendations for consideration by the broader community and ultimately by the board as applicable. The processes used are designed to provide equal opportunity for participation by all stakeholders as practically possible. So that's in my comment there if you look at the comment and want to see it written out. I didn't put it in because it was changing work that was done last week, and I thought I'd let the group decide whether that's a clearer version or whether somebody wants to propose a different one. And I see Alan. Go ahead, Alan.
Thank you very much. I generally like that a lot better than what was there before. I have a question, though, on the intent. The term bottom-up has been construed before as not allowing the board, for instance, to initiate the discussion. And, you know, you've seen cases where if the board says, please do this, it's not bottom-up. Even though they're not really contributing to the solution, they're just asking for the answer. You know, therefore, a PDP initiated by the board, is that bottom-up? I think it is. But the wording there could be read by others as not including that. And I just want to make sure that we all have the same understanding of it and a comfort level that it's not going to be misunderstood.
Thanks, Alan, you make a very good point, and I have the same understanding as you. Obviously, the bylaws allows the board to initiate a PDP. So let me ask if you would, and you can do it during this meeting or right after, would you see if you can suggest an edit there that would fix that? Because I think you're right.
Yeah, I'm not even sure an edit is necessary, and I may be overreacting to what I've heard in, you know, in past lives. So I guess I was asking for an opinion of the group, first of all, of can it be misread the way I was suggesting, and if so, we do need to change it. But I'm not 100% sure we have a problem.
Okay. Thank you very much. This is Chuck again. Michael.
Yeah, I suppose the only in addressing that, initially I read this and I said, well, we don't have anything with addressing or limiting who can initiate. However, we do have the originate with stakeholders. So I think the organizational decisions and analysis, the analysis part and reaching it, do originate with stakeholders, but the issue. So I think, Alan, I'll leave it to you to come up with something.
as the other people speak, let me read it again and see if I can come up with something.
Yeah, okay, thanks,
but,
Alan. Go ahead, Michael.
Doesn't that originate, though? I think this pretty clearly does indicate that it really doesn't matter where the initiation comes from, but that this process really originates at a stakeholder level.
Yeah, I'm rereading it, if I may interject. It says whereby policy and organizational decisions and analysis, that should be flipped around, by the way, analysis and decisions, originate with stakeholders. I think that's fine. I think we're okay. The originates is modifying the analysis and decisions, and I think we're on good ground there, but I would recommend flipping the order because hopefully the analysis comes before the decisions.
Did you, this is Chuck. Did you get that that little flip on analysis and decisions, Marika?
Yes, I did. This is Marika.
Thank you. Cheryl.
I hate it when he gets my pedantry before me. The analysis and decisions have to be flipped. But anyway, that's just a process issue. I still am wondering whether people can misread it now, Alan has pointed it out. Sorry, my animal world is a blank at the moment. So I guess if everyone is quite sure that there isn't the ability to misread and misinterpret the meaning, then I'm very comfortable with this language, with the flip. But let's all have, you know, a little time to have a little think and see if there's any... I think we should leave that open for some polish if someone can come up with a better way. But I certainly am supportive of this language. Thanks, Chuck.
Thank you, Cheryl. And again, anybody can, if you have some enlightenment of how this could be made absolutely clear, suggest it either in this meeting or afterwards, and we'll do it. Anne.
Yes, thanks. I just wanted to say, it's Anne, Chuck, that I do have a problem with the word originate, and I do understand what Marika said about it, but I think it is misleading, and I would say that the that word has to be changed. You know, policy and organizational decisions and analysis. The other issue I have with it in terms of decisions is that stakeholders develop policy recommendations. The fact is they don't become policy until the board actually, you know, approves the recommendation. And so as far as decisions, I mean, I guess I do think that the language needs work, and I don't have it right at hand, but I do think we need to put a pin in it and revise it. Thank you.
Thanks. This is Chuck. Let me throw something out. What if we said, still leaving the word originate, if somebody wants to change that, we can, but originate with the community or the board, originate with stakeholders who participate in the process or the board, and then develop recommendations, et cetera. I don't know if that really solved. Anyway, think about that. And if somebody's got a clean that, I'm not terribly satisfied with my solution either, as I spoke it out. So, Alan, go ahead.
On reading it again, we're talking about analysis and decisions which lead to recommendations. So the recommendations do come later, and it's explicit there. Would we fix this by putting a footnote in saying the initiation to look at something may come from any level of the organization?
That's a nice workaround. I like that. Let's see. Let's give Jay Scott and Greg a chance, and then we'll try and either defer it to offline or agree on something. Jay Scott.
This is Jay Scott. Here's what I would suggest you do. I always get nervous drafting on the fly. If we can do something on the line, offline, and come up with some language to put in there, that's fine. But why don't we pick a couple of these hard areas where we think there may be interpretation problems and put it on the survey and just say, ask the question. The following language is presented in as a recommendation period. Please paraphrase or give your understanding of what this language means. And just see what people say. It's a nice touchstone to see. That's my suggestion.
Thank you, Jay Scott. Let me ask you this. This is Chuck again. Would you be okay with Alan's footnote approach?
I'd want to see it. I don't want to say anything in a vacuum. I get a little concerned about footnotes because the problem is what weight do people give those? Some people give them great weight. Some people, the academics, tend to believe that they are providing further just explanation. So I'm happy to look at it. And I think that it could be a solution, but I don't want to commit right now.
Thank you, Jay Scott. So if you would communicate that on our list, Alan, that would be great. And just one reaction to submitting a question in our survey on this. I think it's better that our questions really focus on significant issues rather than one like this, although I'm not opposed to that. This is really just a clarification that we don't mean that it can't originate with the board. So having one of our questions focus on this, to me, is not the greatest use of the questions, but that's my own personal opinion. Let me go to Greg.
Oh, I think we may have moved on a little bit from this, but I was going to say that I think we were kind of parsing, maybe it was a little bit of misparsing of the sentence. As the board, and I'm not exactly sure where we are in the current version, but the decisions don't originate from the board. They are, being recommended for consideration by the broader community and ultimately for adoption by the board. That seems to me to be the pathway. I think where we were sticking the board in kind of earlier in the sentence, it just wasn't right.
Thank you, Greg. So, let's not spend any more time on this unless Alan has a solution. Right now, I'd like to move on and solve this offline.
Okay, thank you. Just one comment I meant to make earlier. Someone, maybe it had been Cheryl or somebody, said, if there's a chance that something's going to be misread, there is always the chance that something's going to be misread no matter how clear it is. So, we have to live with that. That's a part of the world we're living in. I really do suggest either a footnote, or if you don't like a footnote, a parenthetical, which has the same value but it's in line, can address this. And I'd be glad to try to suggest something if that's what the group wants.
That would be great. And if somebody else wants to suggest something, feel free to do so. But let's move on from this. Going to Section 4, which starts on page 13, and that's policy and implementation principles. Jay Scott, did you have another comment?
Old hand.
Okay, thanks. Chuck speaking. Now, the issue was raised last week that the principles maybe were intended for our own internal use and not part of our recommendations. as you can see in the executive summary or by going back to our charter, we were actually asked to produce principles. So it's one of our deliverables. And if you look at the wording of the principles, they really aren't worded for our working group only, although I think they've been valuable for us in our work. They're really worded to be applied by the community when dealing with policy and implementation. So with that said, do we really need to talk about this any further, about whether they intended for the community or for our working group? And then the key question then comes up. What I suggested is that we add a recommendation that the principles be adopted by the GNSO Council and the ICANN board to guide further option. Now, the reason I say that is related to what we talked about earlier with regard to bylaws changes. Something like our principles are not going to go into the bylaws, I don't believe. At the same time, if we really want them to be followed, it'd be nice to refer back to an approval by at least the GNSO Council, and even better, by the board, some motion where they were approved, not to change the bylaws, but rather to emphasize their importance and increase the probability that they will be followed. So that said, let me be quiet and open it up for discussion. Okay, Chuck again, not seeing any hands. If anybody objects to adding the preliminary recommendation number one that says the working room recommends that the following principles are adopted by the GNSO Council and ICANN board to guide any future policy and implementation related work, please indicate so in by putting a red X in the in Adobe Connect. And Cheryl, let's see. Well, let me look at what that means.
Chuck.
Oh, you're stepping away.
Cheryl here. I'm actually, I've transitioned to mobile. I am on the other mobile with the AdobeConnect Road open. Because I'm driving, if you could treat me as not being in the AC room for most of the next half hour and read out the, I have read the sentences that it's proposed. And if you can just do a little bit of reference to refresh my aging memory, Chuck, that
will
be good.
Absolutely, Cheryl. We'll do that. Are you okay? And then let me do that right now. Are you okay with adding the preliminary recommendation on the principles? You need me to reread it?
Yes. No, okay. You don't need to repeat it. Just keep up the good work, and I'll let you know if I disagree, okay?
Okay, thanks. I appreciate that. Okay, not seeing any disagreement, we'll move on from that. And I think the next green highlighted item is in on Section B of Section 4, which is on nearly to the top of page 14. And I can't read my comment there. Let me go back to the... to the chat. Let's see, because the green highlighting is blocking out my text in blue. See, note that this does not. Can anybody read comment
Chuck,
7 that I put in?
Chuck, this is Marika. I can help there. Basically, I think you changed in what is highlighted in green. I think you changed efforts to processes, and your comment is, know that this does not apply to P&I working group efforts, but rather to P&I processes. So I think you just flagged that you made that change.
Oh, okay.
Which is already in there.
Thank you. My green background blocked out my blue font, so I can't read my own printout. So, okay, thank you. Any discussion on that? I wanted you to be aware that I made that change just in case anybody had a concern with that. Okay, let's go on. And I think the next green item is on page 17, which is a section D of the principles, and the subsection 2, which is titled Limitation of Implementation. And part B says there should be a mechanism to flag and address situations where there may be a deviation between the implementation and the policy as it was originally intended. And can you help me out there too, Marika?
Yes, this is Marika. So basically, I think you already read your comment. So your comment is, have we included such mechanisms? Should we or should we leave it to the GNSO Council to develop them? And I actually put up my hand to respond to that because I believe that is exactly what we have developed or are proposing, especially in relation to the implementation principles where the IRT would have that role of flagging issues to the council, and then, of course, there's the different mechanisms that the council would have available to deal with those. So at least from my perspective, I think we have provided for those mechanisms in the report.
Thank you. Appreciate that. This is Chuck again. Any comments on that? I'm fine with that. I obviously didn't correlate those things when I did my review here, but that makes sense to me. Anne?
Yes, thank you, Chuck. It's Anne. I just think as a practical matter that at the time of assigning an IRT, that whether it's staff or whoever should be briefing the IRT on these available mechanisms, and I'm not sure whether that's something that's already in the proposed amendments to the PDP manual, or it just, the availability of these procedures needs to be, if they're recommended, there needs to be education on it. Thank you.
So you're not, this is Chuck, and you're not suggesting any changes, but that just for future reference, there should be some education on this. Is that what you're, did I understand that correctly?
Yes, I'm just, it's Anne again. I'm just trying to understand how the IRT becomes aware that it has these options if it goes forward.
Okay.
Maybe Marika can address that, or Mary.
Marika, do you have a comment on that?
Yes, this is Marika. I think what we would do if once these procedures are adopted and the PDP manual is updated with the relevant information, similar to what we do as a when a PDP working group kicks off, we usually take them as well through their requirements, obligations, the information that is in the PDP manual that is of relevance to them to complete their process. I would foresee that a similar thing would happen when an IRT starts, that they are basically given all the relevant materials that they're expected to review and read, and hopefully as well in combination with a short overview of what the main procedures and processes are for the IRT to use. And maybe as a general note as well, I think similar to when we had the last revision of the PDP, I mean, staff would plan on, of course, on having more general overviews and introductions of these new processes and the changes that are being proposed as part of, some of the materials we currently also have available on the GNSO website.
Thank you, Marika. Does that address the issue you raised?
Yes, I think in terms of your comment, Chuck, it does answer it.
Okay, thank you. All right. Moving on then, I think the next comment in green is in the first paragraph on page 18, section 5, the first paragraph of section 5, proposed additional new GNSO processes. And the comment there was, I think it would be useful to develop a question or statement regarding this in the Google form. So that's not really something we need to discuss. That's something that Marika will use. And by the way, if anybody else has areas in here where you think we should ask a specific question in our survey, please get those to Marika between now and Friday so that she can include them in the survey questions. Okay, moving on to the next comment, comment 10, and let me scroll down on my document on the screen to comment 10, which I need to scroll up, I see, because I have fixed some of those so I can read them. Okay, comment 10, I think, says, it says, that I already covered, I'm sorry. Comment 11, which is in item 2, this is on page 18 as well at the bottom, the GNSO guidance process. And my comment was, if a text comment template is used, then it might not be necessary to allow comments in the survey form. Now, let me talk about that a little bit. Most of you are probably on board with what we're talking about here, but just in case not. Actually, I'm okay with allowing a comment box right after the survey question or statement, and I think that works okay, but it probably depends on the tool we use. So we can kind of make that decision when we decide on a tool. Oh, does that make sense? And let me get back over to the Adobe Connect so I can see if there are any hands up. Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I was planning to use a Zoomerang, a tool that we've used for other surveys as well, or I think it's now taken over by SurveyMonkey, or the other way around. but that does allow for having, indeed, you know, agree, disagree comments that you can then aggregate or have percentages on, as well as allowing for then a kind of open comment that people can provide if they want to. And I think that may be helpful because I think that at the same time allows people to, you know, indicate their views on certain things, but at the same time also allows them to provide some additional input. And for example, especially thinking, you know, as we were just looking at the working definitions, you know, those questions may include, you know, are the working definitions helpful? And then the comment box would allow them to say, well, you know, the first two were very helpful, but I thought the one of bottom up was really awful and I didn't understand it. So I think I can play with that. But I think it, from personal experience at least, I think it is would be helpful to at least provide that option, because I think sometimes, as well, questions may be clear for those that have developed the questions, but you know, at least the comment may allow people to either, you know, provide further clarity on why they chose a certain response, or you know, provide suggested changes or edits that otherwise may get lost if people don't want to take the effort to separately submit comments as part of the public comment forum.
Thank you very much, Marika. This is Chuck again. And what we found in the CWGIANA surveys that we did just within the working group is what we did is we did comment boxes. We were using Google Forms, but we did comment boxes at the end of a section rather than after the individual items. And what happened was, and then we asked them to please identify the question. So by actually including the comment box under each one, it avoids having to ask them to do that and possibly them forgetting. So that's very helpful. Now, Marika, I have a question for you. With regard to that tool, does it allow the graphical representation of the results as well as just a text representation?
Yes. This is Enrique. Yes, I think there are various ways in which you can slice and dice it and have graphics and things like that.
Excellent. And again, for having just been through this in the IANA CWG, in a CWG internal survey that we did, two of them actually, it was nice in some cases to be able to graphically represent it, and it makes it really clear and easy to talk about and for people to understand. Okay, so I'm not seeing any other comments on that, so that sounds fine. Notice on page 18 again the clarifications that Marika added on non-binding advice for the GIP and binding guidance in the case of the GGP. And then on, let's see what my comment was. The next comment was, so I guess we've already covered that one. Let me go on to page 19. There are some in item 3 there, and then towards the bottom of the page, there are some comments there that all relate to section 1 at the bottom, which is particular the following questions. And this is really just getting back to our survey and the comments, so I don't think we need to talk about those. We've already covered those, and Marika's talked about the survey tools that we will use. So I think we can go on to page 20.
Chuck, this is Marika. Some people have their hands raised.
Oh, let me thank you, Marika. I had gone over to my Word document. Go ahead, Ann.
Yes, thanks, Chuck. This is Ann. It goes back, actually, to the binding guidance language.
Okay. On page 18.
Page 18. And I just had a flashback to Jeff Newman saying, look, if the ICANN board does not follow the advice, you know, provided by the GNSO, they need to come back to us and tell us why. And it was part of, you know, I think what was behind some of the formation of this working group. And I'm just kind of racking my brain as to whether we ever considered in our working group processes that I believe a letter was written, in fact, from GNSO Council about this topic. And is somebody going to say, well, you didn't actually address this in your recommendations? And I'm sorry if I'm not tracking everything, but I just recall that there was, you know, much emphasis on that letter that I think that Jeff drafted.
Thank you, Ann. Marika, go ahead.
This is Marika. So this relates specifically to the GNSO guidance process, and in that we've specifically foreseen that process. I think that's one of the reasons why we've probably come up with this process, is to indeed exactly that if the board, you know, rejects the recommendations, they need to come back to the GNSO, and there's a specific process that is outlined in relation to the guidance process that would be triggered, you know, should the board determine that it's not in the best interest of ICANN or the community to go ahead with those recommendations. And that would basically trigger a dialogue whereby the board outlines its issues, the GNSO considers that, the GNSO then has an opportunity to modify its recommendation and bring that back to the board, after which they can consider it again. So I think that is, you know, specifically foreseen in this process, and probably one of the reasons as well why I think there is broad support for this process, so that there is this dialogue that would occur should the board reject recommendations that are not PDP recommendations.
So thanks, Marika. This is Anne again. Are you saying that as drafted and about to be put out for public comment, that we are recommending as a group that if the board does not follow GNSO policy advice, that triggers a GNSO guidance process?
And this is Marika. No, the idea is that the way in which the GNSO would provide advice is the guidance process. So if the GNSO follows the guidance process, it puts obligations on the board to consider that guidance.
Okay, so not a positive, and this is Anne again for the record, not a positive obligation on the part of the board to come back and say, we're not following this, and so you may wish to consider your guidance process, but just that GNSO knows that it has this tool available when the board does not act in accordance with GNSO recommendations.
This is Chuck. Go ahead, Marika.
This is Marika. I think just, at least from my perspective, I think the whole idea around it is that the GNSO wouldn't anymore, you know, provide advice that is not gone through this process, because basically that doesn't put any kind of obligations or requirements on the board. So if I think the whole idea behind this is by having formal processes, the GNSO Council would use those whenever they believe it is something worth the label guidance or advice. So at least in my maybe perfect world, we wouldn't have any instances where the GNSO Council, without any kind of formal process, would submit something to the board and then wait and sit there to see if the board would respond to it or not. It would all go through these new processes that would have specific, you know, triggering mechanisms and requirements on the board to respond or you know, adopt.
Okay. So, Marika, this is Chuck. I have a very specific question for you. Just a second, Ann. I have a very specific question for you. Does the guidance process, as we've proposed it, require the board, as much as we can require the board, to respond to the GNSO Council or the GNSO?
Correct.
So I think that addresses what I think you're wanting to make sure of, Ann, but let me let you answer that.
Well, I think what I'm wanting to make sure of, and this is Ann again, Chuck, thank you, is that in our description of the GNSO guidance process that we expressly state, and I realize this is a late-breaking comment, that this is a process that can be used when the board declines to follow, you know, a GNSO policy recommendation.
Before I comment, this is Chuck. Before I comment, let me let Alan go ahead, and then I'll come back to Marika.
My hand went up before Ann made her comment, so why don't we follow that through and then come back to me.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. In relation to the board rejecting GNSO policy recommendations, that is already incorporated in the PDP, how that is dealt with, and that follows a similar model as rejection of GNSO guidance process. So I don't think that is an issue here, and that is already foreseen and in place.
Wow. I'm sorry. I'm really confused here. I need to ask a clarifying question. It's Ann again. So what was Jeff talking about then? Because you and Jeff were the ones who really moved the PDP manual development, and Jeff felt that there wasn't anything in the PDP manual that covered the situation that he was unhappy about.
So this is Rick. I can respond to that. I think what Jeff was basically, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think basically what he was commenting on is indeed the absence of a guidance process that would put any formal requirements on the board. Currently, the only process that the GNSO has available to itself that would require a board response or consideration is the PDP. So I think his concern or maybe frustration was around the fact that any other ad hoc process that was used by the GNSO did not put any requirements on the board, not even one of a response. So hopefully...
And does our GGP require the board to respond?
Yes.
Okay. And
that's the question, and that's the question I was asking earlier, because I think that was the key element. And she said, yes, it does.
Okay, we don't say that in our description of it, do we?
And this is Marika. That's in the detailed. I mean, we can't put everything in the description, but it does say that it has a binding force on the board to consider the guidance. And I think that is specifically considering the guidance is a requirement that forces the board to respond, whether it's to adopt the recommendations or to reject them. It forces them to deal with them. So I think that is clear in the description. But of course, the detailed details. Exact details of the process are provided in the annexes that outline both the content for the policy development or for the manual as well as the bylaws.
Okay, so this is Chuck. So before I go to Alan, I'm going to close this one off and suggest the following. Certainly, and take a look at the detailed description of the GG, the guidance process, and make sure that you're comfortable. And then my suggestion, because of the late date that we're at and we need to get the comments, our deadline for getting the comments out is Monday, that if there's still concern on this, that you or others or your constituency submit comments in this regard during the public comment period. Because we do need to get through all the green items today, so I hope that's okay. But let's handle it that way so that we can move on from this issue. And it's not because the issue isn't important. It's because we're going to have to manage time, and we do have the opportunity, all of us, even members of the working group and their groups, to comment during the public comment period. And at that point, it will be really good that we document those concerns in the public comment period, because the working group will be responsible for addressing the public comments. So going to Alan.
Thank you very much. If I can remember what I was going to say. by the way, with regard to your last comment, there are many of us, and I'm one of them, who hasn't done his homework well the last few weeks. There's just been too many other things. And there's many, I suspect, other work group members who are in the same position. And once this is formally published and we have a few weeks, it's probably going to be the first time some of us have done a really careful read-through and identify perhaps all sorts of things that we've missed when we're looking at it every week. So, that's part of this process and part of the good parts of this process. However, what Marika said when we started this discussion a few minutes ago brought us back to the first question that Anne raised of what bylaw changes are needed. I would strongly suggest that ultimately any place that we are requiring board action or requiring a significant board threshold to reject, that we may not need bylaw changes, but those are places that we probably want bylaw changes, just to highlight them in Annex A or wherever it's appropriate. Because very often when we start having, I won't say fights, but disputes, way later on, we make references to the bylaws. And those kind of things are useful to make sure are in the bylaws, even if we don't document the full other details associated with the process. Just a thought. And again, not to be incorporated in this go-around.
Thank you, Alan. Okay, so the next green item is on page 20, item 5, and it's with regard to the termination of a GGP, and it says it is proposed that it would be sufficient to require a simple majority council vote as defined in GNSO procedures to terminate a GGP prior to delivery of the final report, and the question was asked there, what does sufficient mean? Well, sufficient means a simple majority vote. Now, maybe it's not worded the whole sentence isn't worded very well, but right now what we have in our initial report is to terminate a GGP, unlike a PDP working group, okay, a simple majority council vote as defined in the GNSO procedures, okay, so that brings in the House issues or any future procedure that's defined, would be all that is needed to terminate a GGP. Any concerns about that? Do you want to reword this so it says because of the edit that was added there, and I think I may have been the one that added that, we probably don't need to say it is proposed. We probably could just say, A simple majority council vote as defined in the GNSO procedures is sufficient to end the GGP. And there's different ways to word that, but is that okay? Any more concerns about that? Marika?
This is Marika. I was initially going to comment that I think the edit that you may probably address the comment, which I believe was from Mike, and that the sufficient wasn't really sufficiently explained. But can you just repeat the edit that you were proposing?
Sure. Let me do a little better job. This is Chuck. By the way, Michael, do you agree? Does that address it, your concern, if that was you?
I think that does.
Thank you, Michael.
Me, but so, it does.
let me try and do this. In fact, let me just say, Marika, just you know what we're trying to say there. Would you just fix it? I mean, rather than me taking time to word it, okay? I'm perfectly comfortable, and I'm sure everybody else is too, rather than taking time on the call. So it should be a more direct statement and then kind of a indirect statement that said it would be sufficient. What we're really saying is it is sufficient. So and you're right. The edit, I think, addressed Michael's concern. Okay. Now, going over to quite a ways over, I think, to page 25 and comment 16. Let me quickly look at that. Got to go over a couple more pages. Okay. So I don't know if that comment number is still correct, but anyway, the first bullet, it's now the first bullet on, or no, it's the second bullet on page 25, okay? Noting that IRTs serve an advisory role is the bullet, the paragraph we're talking about. And it says the working group noted that it would be unlikely that any form of leadership roles would be needed. Are we all comfortable with that statement? Is my question to everyone. My experience, it's always helpful to have, and I guess my own bias, personal bias here is that it's always better to have a leader even if they don't have to do too much leading so that they have the responsibility. But I'm just throwing that out and see what you think. And if everybody's comfortable with that, I can be comfortable with that. Let's start with Alan.
Chuck, my hand is up. It's Alan. And Marika's hand is up also.
I see that. And I just called on you, Alan.
Ah. Sorry, didn't hear. Must have been talking. I think we decided that we did not need a volunteer leadership, but a staff member played a leadership role in that group. I thought that's what the conclusion was.
Okay. Thank you. Chuck again. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, yes, this is Marika. I think as I responded as well in the notes below, is also my understanding that in the IRT, it's actually the staff's responsibility to keep things moving forward and coordinate as necessary with the members of the IRT. Of course, it does not mean that in certain situations additional coordination is needed, and I think for that we foresee the council liaison possibly taking that role. But I think this is just to reflect that contrary to a PDP working group where you have a chair who is responsible for moving things forward, in an IRT, it's actually the staff's role to chair the IRT and keep things moving forward. So I think that's what that sentence is trying to say.
Thank you, Marika. Anne? Are you on mute, Anne?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. It's Anne. I tend to agree with your comment that, leadership within the IRT itself is probably, helpful. I think really the council liaison idea is the best idea for, a leader for that group to perhaps, if needed, suggest one of these, three processes by taking that recommendation back to council. I think council liaison can be, designated and given council liaison handbook or something. So I agree with you, Chuck, that there needs to be leadership within the IRT that is that cooperates with staff but is not staff.
So this is Chuck. I don't want to go down the council liaison route again because there was quite a bit of difference of opinion whether the council liaison should do that. And so if we go down that path again, we're going to be, I think, retreading ground we already tread. How about if we were just to say that the working group noted that leadership roles can be fulfilled by staff or community members, which is, I think, what we're getting at here. In other places, we want the leadership roles fulfilled by community members. In this particular case with an IRT, we're not necessarily saying it can't be staff, Whereas in a PDP or a GDP or something like that, we would want it to be community member. Would that work? Anybody opposed to that? Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I would put an as needed or something like that in it, or normally. Give these groups some wiggle room. They're going to be vastly different depending on what it is they're doing.
That, so you would say the working group noted that as needed, a staff person could provide leadership for an IRT. Is that correct? Did I translate that right, Alan? And feel free to translate
it differently. Normally a staff person takes a leadership role, but other options might be adopted as needed.
Okay. All right. So, Marika, unless somebody objects, I'm going to ask Marika to use her great writing skills to reflect that. Is that okay, Marika?
Yep.
Okay. Going down two more bullets, the bullet that says the working group noted that the principles should be used to guide issues such as how to deal with disagreement in an IRT without providing too many specifics to allow for flexibility. And then there's an example given and so on. And the comment there is it might be more specific that this is disagreements relating to policy intent rather than this person being expected to deal with all disagreements within the group. Whoever made the comment there can speak to that. If that person is on, it would be helpful if you could do that. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I think if I recall well, I think it's actually coming from Karen. So I don't know if she has any suggestions or wants to respond. I do believe that you had suggested as well, and I don't know if that was specifically in relation to that comment, to actually move that paragraph up so it would flow better. So I don't know if that would address that comment or concern, or whether that was just a separate issue.
Yeah, that next comment there actually does suggest moving it up, and the reason I said moving it up because it really relates to the bullet up above, the third bullet. But Karen, do you want to comment on that? Let me get back over to Adobe so I can see.
Yeah, this is Karen. Can you clarify which comment this is?
Okay, so first of all, the comment I think is comment 17 uh-huh. on page 25, and then comment 18 following that was the one where I suggested possibly moving that bullet up to below the third bullet. Okay, does that help?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have any problem with that.
Just moving it up. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Is that okay? So unless anybody else has any concerns or comments about that, let's keep going. And I think the next one. Next green comment is on page 26, under section 1.4, the second bullet there. And bear with me a second while I look over here. And the comment is on that second bullet under 1.4. Newly proposed edits from these were just edits that I proposed, and should this be the IRT? That's what I changed it to, or should it be staff or something else, or IRT or staff? I just wanted to confirm whether the way I changed it is what we intend there. So the bullet, not right now, the way I changed it, and I put IRT in there. Should the disagreement prove irreconcilable despite such efforts and the consensus view of the IRT, is that the proposed implementation does not conform to the intent of the policy recommendation, the IRT is expected to formally raise the issue with the GNSO Council. Is that okay? Or should that be, should it be something else besides IRT? I assumed it was probably IRT. Let me get back over with Adobe. Bear with me here. Okay, so I see an agreement with Anne. Marika, go ahead and comment, please.
Just to note that I think originally it read the GNSO Council, and that was just probably a mistake. It was just said.
Exactly. It said the GNSO Council should raise the issue with the GNSO Council. Okay, which obviously didn't make sense. So any problems with the way it's changed? I see a couple agreements there. No disagreements, no hands up. So let's keep moving. And I think, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the only other green item is at the very end of the document. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it is way down to the end somewhere. Let me...
Chuck, this is Marika. I also have some highlighted language on page 29 that I just want to confirm that
reviewed
and don't have any issues with. Obviously, we would remove the bracketed sentences, because those were just to draw the working group's attention to it, and the optional not discussed by the working group yet. So just want to make sure that people have seen that. And I also had an edit on
let's
page
pause
85.
There, Marika. Marika, let's pause right there. So on page 29, just about the whole page is in yellow. Everybody should have had time to take a look at that. Any concerns on that? And I see and let's go to Alan.
I do not have a concern because I haven't looked at it. I am leaving the meeting now because I have another one that I need to be at. And I just wanted to point out that towards the end of the chat, a couple one screen or so up, I do have a revised bottom-up
question,
which you may want
to
incorporate.
Thanks, because I haven't been able to follow the chat very closely, as you probably tell. Thanks, Alan.
Just on that same thing, if I can jump the queue.
Sure.
I'm also going to be, well, I'm already in the other meeting, but it hasn't started yet. I'll do my usual split brain thing and stay here with you guys as long as I can. But do note that I am quite supportive of the revised language Alan put in. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Cheryl, and thanks for joining us and for joining us while doing another meeting. That's much appreciated. Michael.
I just wanted to note this is the one section where I had done some revisions, and basically what I had done was just to take out that introductory bracketed language and the optional not discussed by the WG yet, basically because I agreed with the language and I thought that as it stood, it would be something that could be commented upon, not only by the work group, but in the public comments, and I felt comfortable enough with it to think that it could stand on its own in both of those. So the bracketed language out and the optional out, and then beginning with the in the first one it's the WG is, and the second one as the ICANN board, and let that language stand and be commented upon.
Thank you, Michael. That seems clear to me. Marika, you followed that okay, correct?
Yes.
Thank you, Marika. So that bracketed text will be removed, and the optional language will be improved, and then we'll certainly respect people's comments if they comment on what we're saying there. And again, those in the working group can also submit comments on this, so please do so. Marika, go ahead. And then I think there's something on page 30 as well, right? Oh, well, that just was preliminary recommendation number one that we already agreed to include in there. And then the recommendations are renumbered, which you already did. So what's the next item you had, Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. The next item I have is on page 84, and that is just as well highlighted language. It's just to flag that there we have a kind of open item that we expect to finalize after we reviewed public comments. So there's basically the specific procedure to be followed by the council liaison to raise issues with the council and what happens then. And I think we've said in the document itself that the working group would first review the input received on the proposed additional processes and then see if those would be applicable as well for the situation. So I just wanted to flag that that's a semi-open item, just that we're aware of, that is something to come back to when we get to the final report.
Okay, thank you. And then I had a comment, and I know we're out of time, but this shouldn't take too long, but I would like your feedback on it. I had a comment on page 86, the working group, I guess it's page 86, whatever, anyway, it's close to that, the working group membership and participation. Now, right now, we just show the total number of working group members that volunteered at the beginning, some of which never participated. And different working groups have handled this in various ways over the years. oftentimes, we just send something out to all these people and ask them whether they really want to be included. My quick suggestion that I put in my comment was breaking this into two lists, one of them of active participants and then other people who volunteered. I'm not out to expose people who didn't participate, so maybe somebody has a better idea, but I honestly don't think it's fair to those who committed even some time to this working group, and especially unfair to those who have spent considerable time, to lump them all together. That said, I will respect whatever you guys think is best on this. So let's open that up for discussion. And I see Tom's hand.
Hi. Hey, Chuck. This is Tom. One suggestion is to simply publish the attendance list without making a statement about because otherwise you'd have to decide what threshold you would consider to be active participation. Is it 10% attendance, 30%, or what have you?
And I see Cheryl agreeing with that. Thanks, Tom. Marika.
This is Marika. My suggestion was actually to maybe organize a list then in meetings attended. So you basically see at the top those that have attended the most meetings, all the way going down to those that have not attended a single meeting. And I think that probably serves the same purpose, to show who have been the active contributors to the report. So maybe that's a way of I think, addressing your concern without having to split it into two lists where, as Tom says, may get us into difficulty by deciding what is, active versus non-active. Where is that threshold?
Thanks, Marika. I like that, and I see Ann does too. Anybody opposed to that approach? Thanks, Tom, for your suggestion, which contributed to that. And let me scroll down to see if anybody put a red X, and I see, okay, Tom likes that. Okay. Now, I believe that we've made it through the document with all the green items. So thanks for your good cooperation and contributions on this. We all have to be ready on Friday when Marika sends out the questions for the survey. Now, Marika, are you also going to send out possibly a template, or is that something you can just do on your own for the text comments? That's a separate issue, probably just a Word document. What's your intent there?
Yeah, this is Marika. My intent was actually to try and send both, because I think the Word document is probably quite straightforward. And I am hoping to send out a revised version of the report later today. And if everyone agrees, I would hopefully set a cutoff date for Friday as well for any minor edits. So no substantive issues, just minor things that may need to be fixed before publication, if you would all agree with that.
Sounds fine to me. Anybody have a problem with that? Please speak up or put an X in a red X in Adobe. So finally, then, we need to talk about next week. Do we have our regular meeting next week? Unlikely probably that there will be any comments left, but they're in yet. But what do people think on that? Ann?
Yes, thanks, Chuck. As Ann, I would like to vote to cancel next week's meeting. and secondly, when Marika was talking about the final edits, I do think the new formulation of bottom-up is perhaps substantive in nature, but should be included. So I wouldn't necessarily consider that a minor edit, but I think it definitely needs to go in the document. Thank you.
So So when you're saying new formulation of that, what are you referring to?
And again, Chuck, I'm referring to Alan's draft that was posted in the chat, which is a very good draft, I think, in terms of this is the principles language defining bottom-up that
uh-huh.
we were struggling with earlier. And Alan, before he left the call, suggested that, you know, we all look at that language that he posted in chat, and I think that the that principle has to be rewritten before we publish.
And so we need everybody to respond to that, including what Alan submits, by the deadline on Friday, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Very good. So anybody opposed to canceling next week's working group call, please speak up. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Not objecting to canceling next week's meeting, but maybe suggesting a call the week after so we can actually think and talk about how we want to organize the session in Singapore.
And also how we want to approach the public comments as they come in, because it might be helpful for us to start doing that before the end of the public comment period, if nothing else, to kind of refine our methodology. And I totally concur with the meeting the following week, because we need to carefully design, and we maybe devote the whole meeting to that 2 weeks from now, to make sure that we design our time in Singapore to maximize the fact that it's an in-person meeting, and if it's carefully designed, we'll maximize the value of that, in my opinion. So so we will plan on a meeting 2 weeks from today. Please try to be in that, because this will be really important to have as much input as possible, and we'll make it better the more of you we have contributing to that in the design of our sessions in Singapore. Now, Marika, a question. I assume we're having the meeting with the GNSO over the weekend like we usually do for a status update, and I'm guessing that we would need a little more time than the 15 minutes we usually get for that, because we should at least, I think, go over the recommendations. Now, we can talk about that 2 weeks from now in more detail, in addition to our actual working group session in Singapore, but I think that it would probably be useful to have a little more than 15 minutes with the GNSO on the weekend session.
Yeah, and this is Marika. In the current draft, there are 30 minutes allocated to the discussion, indeed taking into account that the publication of the initial report.
So we have 30 minutes. So we're, I see that in the chat now. So, and I think that's okay. So depending on questions, we're likely to get more questions now that we have specific recommendations, but we'll deal with that. Now, Marika, did we cover the outstanding issues that you noted that are in the discussion notes?
This is Marika. Yes, I believe that is everything I had on my list. Thank you.
Okay. Apologize for going over a little bit. We covered a lot of ground, but I think we're actually going into the public comment period in really good shape. Please, please look at the questions that Marika puts out on Friday, and we have until 1500 on Monday to respond. If all of us respond in a timely manner there, we'll contribute to a good public comment period and an easier time for us to summarize and analyze the comments. Anything else before I adjourn? Thanks, everybody. Have a good rest of the week.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck.
Bye.
Thanks all.
Thank you.
Bye.